Today on Basic, Nick Kroll.
I did a stand-up special called Thank You Very Cool for Comedy Central, and it was my stand-up, but I was also doing, I had been doing a lot of character work, and so I pitched this sort of hybrid stand-up special slash characters, including Oh Hello with Mulaney. It's going to be a sketch show, but it's going to be these recurring characters. Then we also did this very like lo-fi public access show called Too Much Tuna, where we would prank people with too much tuna fish. We would have a talk show where you'd be at a cafe and then they'd be bringing the and be like, I'm here with Jen and we're talking to Doug as well. And then now, and this is Too Much Tuna.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Basic, the official podcast of the unofficial history of cable television. I'm Doug Herzog, a former TV executive, and Jen, this is just Too Much Tuna.
It is Too Much Tuna, and I'm Jen Chaney, TV critic for Vulture and New York Magazine, and yes, I do have my own hormone monstrous.
Jen, today we welcome Nick Kroll, the podcast.
Let's not say podcast. Shouldn't we say podcast, if it's Nick Kroll? I believe that's the proper terminology.
The podcast?
Yes, yeah, the podcast.
So we welcome Nick Kroll to the podcast, and I'm sure our listeners know him from The Kroll Show, from Comedy Central, The League, from FX, but his biggest hit may be the one on Netflix.
That's right. Nick is the co-creator of the hilarious Netflix series Big Mouth. We're going to talk about that and the other shows we mentioned and a lot more with Nick. And then Doug and I will be back at the very end to offer our in-depth analysis of Bobby Bottle Service. So, Nick Kroll, welcome to Basic. We are extremely excited to have you on the podcast. And we always ask our guests a first question initially, which is, are you old enough to remember when you first got basic cable? Or if not that, at least what you watched on basic cable when you were young?
Yes to both, because we were not a cable house growing up. I was a ABC, CBS, NBC, WOR, WPIX, and that was about it. 2, 4, 5, 7, 9, 11, and 13, tri-state area. And we were not a cable household. Then I think my first cable wasn't even basic cable. It was, I think, like, we got the first version of DirecTV, satellite TV, mm-hmm. when I was like 19, like when I was leaving the house. And I was like, I cannot believe that this is when we are finally getting cable. I had specific friends only because they had cable that I hung out with them.
I'm assuming to watch MTV or yes. whatever it was in those days, right?
Yes, exactly. So like Andrew Goldberg, who I created Big Mouth with, who's been my childhood, my friend since I was in first grade, he was a cable house. I would go there and watch a lot of MTV.
Do you still go to his house to watch cable?
No, I think we all, let's see.
He goes to his house to create television now.
Yes, I go to his house to create streaming to no longer work in cable.
So there you go. Fair enough. Mm-hmm. So you managed to get out of the house ultimately, mm-hmm. despite the fact they wouldn't let you watch TV.
Yeah.
And work your way to Georgetown University.
Yes.
Now, Mulaney went there too.
Correct.
Did you guys meet there? Were you in the same era? How did that work?
Oh, yeah. Well, my freshman year, I did this thing called The Funniest Act on Campus, which I bombed doing. But I met Mike Birbiglia, who won the competition. And then Mike and a bunch of our friends, his friends who later became my friends as well, Brian Donovan, Ed Harrow, Allison Becker, a wonderful group of super talented people, did a sketch show. And I, because of this Funniest Act on Campus, auditioned for the sketch show. Did that, and then the next year joined the improv group with that whole crew. So I met Mike and all those other folks my freshman year. And then when I was a senior, I was the head of the improv group, and I cast John Mulaney and Jacqueline Novak and a bunch of other very talented people I didn't cast. But those two particularly were freshmen when I was a senior. So I met John when we crossed over for a year and started working together then as friends and also just writing and performing together. It was a very weirdly fruitful place for us to find comedy.
Yeah,
I'm curious. I mean, can you remember when you started working with John, did you immediately have a sense of like, okay, this guy and I have kind of the same sensibility, sense of humor, or did it take a while to kind of get to know each other?
No, it was immediate. I mean, I remember in his audition for the improv group, he did a scene with this other guy and I was like, wow, this scene is so, these two guys are so funny. And then I was like, well, let's see how they are on their own. And I did, you know, you paired them separately and the other guy was fine. And John was still like cosmically funny. And it was very clear right away that he was an incredible talent. And then as the year went on, we realized how similar our sensibilities were. And we started writing together even in college. And then when I graduated, I moved to New York and he like, interned at Comedy Central.
He interned. He used to answer my phones.
Yes, I know. Yeah. I know.
What? I didn't know this.
And I think he claims in a bit that he's the one who took the phone call about Chappelle disappearing.
Yes.
And came and told me.
Yes, I believe. Yeah. I believe he was living on my couch when that happened.
Being tortured by Lou Wallach daily.
Yes, yes. I think it was fun, you know, because I had, John was interning there. Conrad Mulcahy, who's another guy who I went to college with, was working there as well with Jesse Klein, who I was working with, you know, I had met in New York and she was still an executive, but then also was doing stand up and writing. And so
that was sort of the scene you fell into right in New York, right? Jesse and John and
yeah,
a bunch of those folks.
Yeah, I moved to New York and just started doing open mics, Upright Citizens Brigade, anything and everything. And John lived with me that summer, I don't know, like of his like junior year, and was interning at Comedy Central, and we were going and doing open mics, and I was meeting like Jesse and Chelsea Peretti and
asking me for my bar mitzvah pictures.
Yes, hounding Doug Herzog for his bar mitzvah pictures, which was an amazing, frankly, an amazing way in to like to get access to you at that moment was incredible. And I will just to say, Doug, you were incredibly generous and kind and patient, you know, like with someone who's just starting out, you were very nice.
Well, so everybody understands. Yeah.
Why did you need his bar mitzvah pictures?
Well, there you go. There you go. That's the question.
So the first thing I kind of ever did before I had, you know, been able to make my living actually doing comedy, I did a coffee table book with my brother-in-law, Roger Bennett, who has since gone on to create Men in Blazers, a very, very successful podcast and television show that's based around the world of like Premier League soccer and sports and stuff. He's an English Jew, and Jules Schell, who he had worked with in his previous career nonprofit. And the three of us created this website that then became a book called Bar Mitzvah Disco. And it was people's pictures and stories from their bar mitzvahs and bat mitzvahs largely from the 70s to the 90s. And Doug was...
I was the 70s.
He was the 70s. Doug was incredibly... He was a really important, actually. His pictures were amazing. His stories were amazing. And they really did capture a specific era that we didn't have really great photos and recollections of. I know it's New Jersey. I'm trying to remember the town because I have a very clear...
Paterson, New Jersey. Yeah.
Yeah. Paterson, New Jersey. You were in a few different spots in the book. Your pictures, you had a white suit.
Yes, that was my evening wear. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. You had two, there was the
a couple of outfits.
There was the daytime look for the service, but then the evening wear. And I remember you talking about living in a somewhat integrated town, which wasn't entirely common. So like for a lot of the bar mitzvah pictures that we got, where it's like a bunch of little white Jewish kids and Doug had some level of integration with black kids and white kids. And
it looked like an episode of the Cosby Kids, but
it really did. It was anyway. So that was before I was making a living doing comedy. We hatched this idea for a coffee table book and got a deal to make a book. And it was a great first thing. It taught me at the beginning of how to like produce something, whether it's a book or a TV show or a web series or anything. And also like connected me to people like Doug. And that was the beginning of having like a, you know, that was like that was like a felt like a big deal of having a weekly place on TV where people could see your name. And then from there, I started coming out to LA to audition for pilots, and I booked my first real pilot season in LA. I booked a show called Cavemen.
Oh, right.
Oh, yeah.
Right. I forgot that based on the commercial.
I forgot about that.
Based on the very successful, very well regarded, critically acclaimed commercial for Geico of Cavemen, they made a show out of it, which I still contend was actually not a bad show. It was reviled, but it was, my joke about it is like, you know, the critics didn't like it, but what I always took solace in was that the public hated it also. the next year, it was about a year later, I was doing kind of a bunch of different stuff then at that point. The next year, I booked The League and started that. I think that's probably like 2009-ish or something mm-hmm. like that. Is FX considered basic cable?
Yeah, where
is that?
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah.
Definitely.
Well done.
Well, they're the basic cable channel that acts like a premium cable
indeed.
Channel. but they are basic.
Yes,
they are one of us, as we like to say.
Yeah, copy that.
So to pick up on something you said earlier, you said the League was loosely scripted, and I've always wondered just how loose was it.
It was outlines. I mean, we were given 12 page, what would turn out to be like 12 to 15 page scriptments is what I would call them. Mm-hmm. So the scenes were beaded out, but every scene, you know, and they had jokes they would want us to hit. But there was never a moment where they weren't happy to have that joke beaten. So every scene, it's very much like Curb. I mean, it's the same mm-hmm. sort of system as Curb has. There's a lot of jokes and there's really scenarios that they want to hit. But as far as jokes go, you know, specifically about what someone was wearing or references being made, there was an incredible amount of liberty to find it.
Mm-hmm. Felt watching it like a great organic ensemble, even though it wasn't necessarily organic, but it really, it felt that way watching it. You guys, it always looked like you guys were having a great time.
We had a great, I mean, the only, Paul and I knew each, of the main cast, Paul and I knew each other, and obviously Katie and Mark are married, knew each other, but the rest of us didn't know each other, and it was pretty immediate that we found our rhythms, and I think the unifying factor of it being fantasy football, which is so built on talking shit, and that in and of itself really lends itself to the kind of improvisation that we were doing. It was very well. The whole system and structure complemented itself to create the feeling of an ensemble group of friends, and we all got along very well right away. And I have to say, for seven seasons as a cast, got along incredibly well.
Mm-hmm. Paul was in New York, right? When you were there with Human Giant and Aziz and those guys.
Yeah, Paul was in New York at UCB, and Jason was too, and Aziz and Hubel, and that right. was one of my first big things was the Human Giant. I pitched sketches to Human Giant and was on it briefly,
which was an MTV show.
And the Human Giant marathon is worth a look from you guys, which was a 24-hour marathon. They let MTV let Human Giant take over MTV, and they were on for 24 hours straight. It was a truly insane endeavor, and you feel us insane. It felt like you were watching like an underground show at Upright Citizens Brigade, but it was being broadcast on live television.
There's only one that I think outdoes that. Around, probably a little before that, they once handed the network over to Courtney Love for 24 hours.
Similar vibe.
Which was historic, yeah.
Similar vibe. Yeah. Similar vibe.
Well, it's interesting, you know, we talked about John Mulaney earlier. We're talking about Mantzoukas. Like, you've met a lot of people along the way and, like, continued to have them be part of your, obviously, friends, but work landscape. I mean, is that something that you're always kind of thinking about in the back of your mind? Is this somebody that I want to continue working with?
Can I use them?
Yes.
Well,
they get me a free breakfast.
Yes. It turns out that I've gotten them free. No. I think, yes, and in that, like, I have always been attracted to funny people in my friendships. So, you know, it's like I met John and I found him hilarious, and and vice versa. And I would watch Jason before I knew him, or watch Paul and be like, God, these guys are so funny. And then, you know, we become friends, and then you realize that, oh, we find each other funny. This is, of course I want to hang out with this person. And then, you know, as you're making stuff, like for me, it's just collaboration has just always been the central driving force of my work. And I've been very lucky to be friends with who I consider to be the funniest people. Mm-hmm. And so as I have gone and done the various things I've done, I've always brought them with me because they're the funniest people.
Well, you know, we're going to get to the Kroll Show in a second, mm-hmm. but one of the great things about the Kroll Show was a couple of these bits you did that were two-handers, right?
Of course.
Right. So we'll talk about Mulaney, but, you know, Jenny Slate, and then of course, Rich Dix, with,
John Daly.
John Daly.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. So let's talk about the Kroll Show. So how did that all get started?
Yeah. How did you pitch that?
I was doing the league, but I had simultaneously been doing. I did a stand-up special called Thank You Very Cool for Comedy Central in, God, I think it's now like 2011, 2012, and it was my stand-up, but I was also doing. I had been doing a lot of character work, and so I pitched this sort of hybrid stand-up special slash characters that were both live on stage and then also filmed bits, including Oh Hello with Mulaney, and they were in the audience of the show. I did this character Fabrice that I had been doing a lot of, who was the craft services coordinator for That's So Raven. I was doing this character Bobby Bottle Service, who was the head of security, who was like a Jersey Shore kind of character. And so I integrated them into this stand-up special. Simultaneously, at that moment, Comedy Central was flirting with, you guys were flirting with doing like 15-minute programming. It was right as Adult Swim.
That's right.
Was starting to like take hold as in live action and was having success with Tim and Eric and all these other shows that were kind of 15-minute chunks. So then we shot a pilot of Rich Dix as a 15-minute show for Comedy Central. And ultimately, Kent and Doug and everyone there were like, we like this, but we think that ultimately we'd rather have between what you shot as this Thank You Very Cool with the special with all these characters and Rich Dix, we think a sketch show from you would probably be ultimately a better, more fruitful fit, you know? So then we went off and shot a pilot for that. And we had the Rich Dix, this little pilot we had done, we had the Rich Dix sketch. And then I had all of these sketches that I had shot on my own of Fabrice, you know, interviewing Steve Carell for a press junket. I had like Bobby Bottle Service. We had shot this other thing with John Daly as Rich Dix. We had shot this thing called the Ed Hardy Boys. And it was like Bobby Bottle Service and his character was Peter Paparazzo. And it was the Ed Hardy Boys in the case of the missing sick belt buckle. And and so we just, and Oh Hello, Mulaney and I had shot some random Oh Hello pieces. And also we had the special. So it was all these things. And we said, you know, it's going to be this. It's going to be a sketch show, but it's going to be these recurring characters. So as opposed to just one-off sketches that are premise-driven, these are going to be really character-driven. You're going to come back to some of the same characters throughout the run of the show, and it will be sort of different than other sketch shows.
They had arcs, right?
Yes.
What was the doctor?
Dr. Armand.
Dr. Armand, yeah.
Dr. Armand was a spinoff. So when we shot the pilot, we made Publicity, which was these two publicists named Liz. I brought in Jenny Slate, who I had been friends with from my early days in New York. She had just was not returning to Saturday Night Live. And I was like, come play with me, do this. And she came in and we shot Publicity. And then that began to become the basis for all of these reality show spinoffs out of that. So Publicity begat Dr. Armand, a plastic surgeon for dogs that Jenny takes her dog to because she wants to get her dog red carpet ready for this crazy Cupcakes for Canine Cancer. And it was Mitch Hurwitz, weirdly, the writer plays a character in the show because he was very close with John Levenstein, who's my showrunner from the Arrested Development, and John Larroquette, and years of working together. And then so Dr. Armand then got his spinoff show about his family, Armand of the House, which then begat all these other spinoffs, because then there's this character Caesar that I played. And it just became this. At that time, it was when reality shows, talking about basic cable, reality shows were spinning off and cannibalizing on themselves and consuming one another and spinning off these new things. It was like you had The Surreal Life, which I love that show. And then that begat like Flavor of Love,
right?
And then that begat, you know,
Love and Hip Hop,
and then it was like,
right.
And Love and Hip Hop Atlanta, and it just keeps on going. Yeah.
New York loves whatever. Like all of those, this, you know, and the Kardashians were just starting, and so there were all of the Kardashians publicists were getting shows. It was all of that time when. And we really leaned into that as a one, because it was so felt very current. Two, reality. There's a reason reality shows are so watchable and so cheap to make. And it was also a great opportunity because we had these insanely talented improvisers, you know, that Jenny and I had been good friends. And so we had the ability to improvise so freely. And when you're shooting reality style, you are shooting improv style. You've got three cameras going at all times. It can be messy. The coverage can be kind of hasty. And it really lent itself to improvisation. And we were able to churn out a ton of content. You know, we could have a setup in an office and shoot what ended up being 11 minutes of content in a day. When you're trying to work with Doug Herzog budgets, you know. but you know, when you're working with, you know, basic cable budgets, even though Comedy Central was actually, I will say, always supportive of what we needed to get the shows done
emotionally,
yes, but it allowed the dollar. It really, those kinds of formats really stretched the dollar.
How do we get to a dusty Upper West Side apartment or a New York deli and you and Mulaney and Too Much Tuna?
Before I moved to LA, John and I have been working together since college. And then I was hosting a weekly stand-up show with Jesse Klein called Welcome to Our Week. And Jesse booked a part as a writer performer on David Spade's show on Comedy Central. Was called Hollywood Minute? No.
It wasn't called the Hollywood Minute, but it was based on that.
Yeah.
I mean, he was doing the Hollywood Minute. I can't remember what it's called. I'll think of it.
Yeah. And so Jesse had to move to LA to take that job. And so I asked John to step in to be my new co-host for this weekly show at Rafifi. And Rafifi was this downtown club that we all met and performed at. So John and I, instead of doing stand-up, we thought maybe we'd do these characters, these guys that we had always seen around New York, who were like, you know, obsessed with Alan Alda and, you know, wore turtleneck sweaters and were, you know, just a men of a certain age. And we fell in love with them and we built these characters and we would host this weekly show where we would open the show and drink Too Much Tuna. We weren't at first it wasn't a prank show. We just drank tuna. We would drink tuna teenies. And then when we started doing Kroll Show, we knew we wanted to do that. We did both these like very sort of Woody Allen sort of real like love letter to New York sketches. But then we also did this very like lo-fi public access show called Too Much Tuna, where we would prank people with too much tuna fish. It made very like we were in the writer's room and John wasn't in the writer's room. I think he was at SNL at that point. And I remember talking to Levenstein and Kreisel and the rest of our writers being like, and John and I have this thing where we talk about too much tuna, like that we would have a talk show where you'd be at a cafe and then they'd be bringing the and be like, I'm here with Jen and we're talking to Doug as well, and this is too much tuna. And then we were like, oh, that should be a prank show where they prank people too much tuna. It was incredibly silly, but it was of course the most fun to do. And then what was so...
And then it kept going.
Well,
had a life of its own.
So we kept doing more of that throughout the run, all three seasons of Kroll Show. But then what was so weird was that, and we were told early on, frankly, by the network, I'll absolve you from this, Doug, was that it was
absolve
like,
him from nothing. Absolve him from nothing.
It was, the concern was that it was too New York, which it was. I mean, it was too New York.
And you know what they mean when they say too New York.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
We all know what they mean. Yes.
Yeah. That Mulaney was too Jewish in it. So.
Or they all say too ethnic.
Yes, exactly. what I will say to Comedy Central's credit, they really never stopped us from doing anything. They were like, our thought is maybe this, you know what it was? It wasn't even Comedy Central at that point. It was like before that, like John and I tried to bring Hello to the Aspen Comedy Festival. And they were like, it's too New York. It's too dot, dot, dot. And we're like, are you fucking kidding me? We're going to the Aspen Comedy Festival. The audience is all like Ralph Lauren Jewish cowboys, like who are just the wealthy cousins of Oh Hello. Okay, like whatever. Anyway, that fueled us that we never got into Aspen with it. But what was so weird was we did it, and what we found weirdly is obviously it resonated with people, but it resonated well beyond like our coastal, you know, elite. It was like I had like 15-year-old girls sending me like, you know, pictures on Halloween of them being like, we dressed as George and Gil. Like it was this really weird thing that resonated in a very surprising way. Anyone who's done a sketch show, and you talk to Schumer, you talk to Key and Peele, and Chappelle took it to the next level by leaving the country. But it's a draining.
It's hard work. You have to reinvent the show with every sketch.
Yeah.
It's a lot of heavy lifting.
And I was just mentally and physically and creatively exhausted. And I went, you know, I mean, you guys might've been happy to say goodbye to the show at that point, but I was sort of like, I'm done. I feel like we did 30 episodes. We actually tied everything together in a nice way that felt like complete within the arcs of what we had built. And I was like, I got to take some time down from all this. And then
that was a great 3-year healthy run, yeah, which felt like an organic way to get in and get out and not beat it to death. And, you know, you said what you had to say. And
yeah. And I will say, in all honesty, like, you know, we were on at the same time as Key and Peele and Schumer, and then simultaneous by the end of the run with Nathan For You and Broad City had started. And it was a real, you guys,
it was a good time. That was a good era.
It was a really, and I'll say this, I really believe for a lot of reasons, I mean, you and Kent and everyone that you guys had been working together at the network. But I also really believe you hired people and you promoted, you created shows from people that you guys believed in, and you let them make the show that they wanted to make. And you didn't try in this very particular, and I will call it like a little golden era at Comedy Central, and I'll humbly put myself inside of it because we were on with all these other shows. But there was a real feeling of like, go for it. Go do what you want to do. And, you know, occasionally be like, does this work or whatever? But like, for the most part, it was, and I think the success at the network and the success critically and in the culturally was really present. And I think that was due in large part to the you guys letting us do the shows that we told you we wanted to make.
Yeah. And that was just to give credit where credit's due. Name checked Kent a few times. Kent Alterman was the head of programming at Comedy Central, and he really presided over that era and all those shows. And he was great at finding great people and letting them do their thing, including himself. So
he was a real fan,
he's an advocate.
An advocate, yes. Yeah,
he was a great advocate.
Having a sketch show at the same time as Key and Peele and Schumer, which were cultural forces at the time, were really like hitting in such a massive way. And I was very pleased with my show and I was very proud of it. And I got a great response from it, but I was looking at where they were in whether, YouTube hits or, in the general cultural conversation. And there were times where I was like, oh man, these guys, like, I don't feel like I've done what they've done. And so I was also like, maybe I need to, like, I don't think this is going to get bigger. And so maybe it's time to wrap this up and figure out what the next thing is.
Smart. Yeah, smart decision.
I want to jump also to talk a little bit about Big Mouth, which has been incredibly successful on Netflix. And I've written about it quite a bit, actually. I think it's a great show.
Thank you.
But it's a show that requires you to play a character named Nick, who is bringing up all these issues that, you know, he's going through in puberty that are at least in part based on some of the things that you went through. And I know it's a writer's room where everybody's kind of like revisiting that experience and plumbing it for material. Was it ever at all uncomfortable for you to do that? Or were you just all on board from the beginning? I mean, it was your idea, so.
It was me and Andrew Goldberg and Mark Levin and Jennifer Flackett. They came to me with the idea for the show. This was actually right after John and I started talking about Oh Hello, almost at the same time. They came to me with this idea for an animated show about, based on me and Andrew Goldberg's childhood going through puberty. Andrew was a very early bloomer and I was a very late bloomer. And it was sort of about these two boys who were best friends who were going through these very different experiences, but both feeling alienated and alone, which is what, as we began to talk more and more about the show, realized like, oh, this is what everybody felt like, no matter where they fell inside of this spectrum of puberty and adolescence and human sexual development. And yeah, it was constantly uncomfortable, but also it was so clear from the beginning that that's where the good stuff was. Mm-hmm. And what was interesting is as the show continued to go on and we started to explore, it was much easier when it was like, well, yeah, I didn't hit puberty and I had a, I had a little boy's penis and I'd look at Andrew and he had hit puberty and had a ton of pubes and like girls didn't look at me the same way. And Andrew simultaneously was like, I was covered in acne and I had slow dance with a girl and cum in my pants, all these things that were so embarrassing, but so foundational and so rich. And I think when we started making the show, we're like, this seems fun, but I don't think we quite realized until we started to really dig in how rich the material was.
We got a couple of questions before you go. And this is going to air in September, but I know you got a couple of things coming up.
Yeah.
Right. Including a film. You're in a film that was directed by Olivia Wilde. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah. It's a movie called Don't Worry, Darling, directed by Olivia Wilde. She's in it with stars Florence Pugh and Harry Styles and Chris Pine, Gemma Chan. It's me and the best looking people on the planet. and it's a really fun thriller. It's like a really Olivia directed the shit out of it. It's really beautiful and it's exciting. It's great looking. I'm very excited for people to see it. I think it resonates because I think there's some really cool stuff happening in it.
Yeah, the trailer is amazing, and I loved Booksmart, which she also directed, so I can't wait to see it.
Me too. And when I got the call, it was like, do you want to go be in Olivia's new movie? It's with Harry and Florence and Chris, and you'll be playing Olivia's husband. I was like, fuck yeah. It was like one of those things where when you read the trades, you're always like, that looks cool. Why doesn't anybody ever ask me to do that? And then I got the call and they're like, oh, they asked me to do that. It was really fun. I mean, minus the fact that we shot throughout COVID pre-vaccine.
Is it promoted as all the world's greatest looking people?
And Nick Kroll. Yeah. that was my pitch. They were like, you know what? We don't need to do that. And then I've got a stand-up special coming out, my first one since Thank You Very Cool on Netflix, and this will come out later. So it's on September 27th. It'll be on Netflix.
Where did you shoot that, Nick?
I shot at the Warner Theater in DC.
Yay!
Which is a beautiful. Have you been? You know that theater?
Sure, I know that theater.
I live in DC and I've grown up there.
It's a beautiful theater. It's historically, I've performed there a number of times throughout my career, and it's one of the best. And DC is a great comedy town. Mm-hmm. And I was supposed to shoot it 2 years ago, pre-pandemic, and obviously everything got shifted. And so it's, what I'll say about the special is that really inspired by Big Mouth in a lot of ways, in that it was Big Mouth was this really autobiographical, much more vulnerable piece of material. And I saw how audiences responded to that more honest, more, forthright, with a lot more of myself in it. I'd always sort of hidden behind the characters I was doing. And so I tried to take those lessons and bring that into stand-up. And so this hour is much more personal and much more self-reflective and really, especially over the last few years, is, I don't really give a fuck about cancel culture. Like, I'm not particularly worried about it. But what I will say is that at a tricky time of who can say what, it felt very safe to make fun of myself. Like, I never worried about the hour because I was like, well, this is all just I am the butt of these jokes.
Right.
And so
this is the act that I saw at Largo a couple of months ago. Sort of most of that.
Yes. Yeah. Some version of it. Yeah. Some version.
Yeah. 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 I was gonna say you were pretty much the butt of all those jokes, as I remember, at least that night.
So it's been, evolving over the years, because it's kind of, the tour was called Middle-Aged Boy, and it was really about, that I was in my 40s and that I was still not quite a adult in all ways. But then, during the pandemic, I got married and had a child. And so that affected the material, really informed the material. And so, we shot it. Bill Benz directed it. It was one of the Kroll Show directors and editors. And it'll be on Netflix, September 27th.
Oh, looking forward to that.
I have one more question before we wrap, if mm-hmm. I can. Mm-hmm. Earlier, when you were talking about Kroll Show and just how much, how much that took out of you, I'm wondering, at this point in your career, could you see yourself doing a sketch show, not exactly like Kroll Show, but something like that again?
Well, it leads into my final plug.
Oh,
which is
beautiful.
Well played.
That
I knew it would do that.
Yes. Which is, I just have wrapped a sketch show that we're editing right now that is called History of the World Part 2. Mel Brooks came to me to see if I wanted to do it as a show.
Mel Brooks came to you.
Wow, that's a sentence.
Well, it's the
yeah. You still want to back that up a little bit, Nick?
The craziest sentence. Yeah, it's the craziest sentence I've ever said, frankly. I brought in Wanda Sykes and Ike Barinholtz and his writing partner Dave Stassen, and we have made it for Hulu as an 8-part sketch show, 8-episode series, and inspired by obviously the History of the World Part One, the 1981 Mel Brooks sketch comedy film. And our goal was to sort of take that Mel, and Mel has been involved. He's narrating the show and has been, he's 96 and still has fucking monster jokes. And so as a Mel Brooks is my most important influence, to be able to do anything for him was incredibly high praise. So in other words, Mel Brooks got me to go back to do a sketch.
So final question.
Yes.
Do you have an all-time favorite basic cable show?
Not counting your own.
I mean, obviously, of course. And, look, Doug's going to be happy either way with this, because I'm going to say, I'm going to say The Grind on MTV. I'm going to Eric Neeson, The Grind. And I don't know. Is that your era, Doug?
Absolutely.
Okay.
When those kids finished the first season of The Real World, we didn't know what to do with them. So we started giving them jobs.
There you go.
And Eric got a job on The Grind.
I had The Grind workout on VHS.
Oh, nice.
That I used to do. Yeah.
Wow. So The Grind, obviously.
Oh, obviously. Sure.
But I did watch the, you know, that was, it was like the sexiest thing on TV at that point in certain ways.
So you don't really remember Club MTV. You're more of a Grind era guy.
I do. I remember Club MTV. I also remember I was on the pilot for a prank show called Boiling Points on MTV. I went down to spring break and I thought I had made it because I was like, it's 2 years out of college. And then they cut my bits out of the pilot and I was not on the show. It was, at the time, felt truly crushing. Like my career was over.
You didn't know you had Caveman to look forward to.
I know. Time, so. But I would say for me, when Jon Stewart took over The Daily Show, I was in college and I was doing improv and I was watching those first years when I was finishing college and then going into New York. And it was Carell and Colbert. And it was, I was watching The Daily Show every night and was like, this is what I want to do. Like, it was more in my like college, like socialist moment,
right,
of like,
right.
And I was doing a lot of media studies. Like I was reading a lot of like, I was reading Adbusters and I
right.
was like,
so that was right in the pocket.
It was right in the pocket. And it was so,
and they were great.
They were so funny and so smart and so sharp, and not everyone was doing it every night. Nobody was doing it like that every night.
No, it was just them at the time, yeah.
It was them, and it was just so, and all I could dream of when I graduated college was like, maybe one day I'll get to write on The Daily Show or maybe be a correspondent, and it didn't work out. But I've been on now as a guest with Trevor, but it was so to me, that show was so important because all the like SNL and Mel Brooks, all that stuff when I was a kid was so important to me of forming my personality as a comedian, right. and what I thought was funny. But that was the first show that I watched as like a burgeoning comedy person that I was like, wow.
You could sort of maybe see yourself there one day.
Maybe one day I could be something like this. And I was just blown away every night by it. So I would say.
Well, two things. A lot of people on our show have trouble, you know, between The Grind and The Daily Show. So I was happy to hear you.
Yeah, it's come up so often.
Yeah, it's come up a lot. But actually, Jen, I think, is he the first person to actually say The Daily Show?
Possibly. Well, he's definitely the first person to say The Grind. But I think he also might be the first person to say The Daily Show.
Well, there you go. Amazingly enough.
What do you guys get? Like the commish? What are you guys getting? What do you get?
Here's what we generally get. So by the way, first, let's finish this up. Thank you very much for being here.
My pleasure.
Nick Kroll, we really appreciate it. Yeah,
thank you.
Great.
Thank you for having me.
What we usually get is, I don't know what basic cable is. And by the way,
I love The Sopranos, which.
Or I love The Sopranos, yeah. So Nick Kroll, always fun and delightful to talk with. And he really gave us some great insight, I thought, into not only, you know, how he's sort of come up with a lot of these shows and characters, but, you know, he's got a pretty good view of what goes on behind the scenes as he articulated around his thoughts on streaming.
Yeah, it's incredible that Big Mouth will likely be the longest running Netflix show, at least for a while. You know, it's been on for several seasons. And I thought it was interesting too, the way he was talking about like the process of having to open up and be vulnerable for Big Mouth has now informed his stand-up comedy as well. I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, well, I think also, particularly when you look at it versus what he was doing previously on Comedy Central with a show like The Kroll Show, where those characters were kind of like making fun of a certain type of person or right, or a broad sketch of a person. And it was funny and fair, but, you know, it feels like he's kind of done that. And now he's a little more self-reflective and looking at himself and trying to find the humor in his life and in his head.
Right. I mean, even some of the voices, like the Liz that he did in Publicity, her voice he kind of uses for Lola in Big Mouth. It's a little bit different, but it's kind of in the same same species. I don't know what you want to call it. Right. But to your point, like, I think one of the things that's so great about Big Mouth is that, yes, it's very raunchy and it is very funny, but it also treats its characters, who are primarily, you know, adolescents, with respect and with sensitivity. And it does you know, I think create a space where you can have a conversation maybe with a teenager about some of these issues, even though, you know, they do not, they are very direct and very, like I said, it can be pretty explicit for a cartoon.
It's blunt. You know, it's funny in that regard. It's a little bit like South Park, right? Where they're using young people to talk about sometimes adult subjects and adult themes, but in a pretty respectful way. And it all ends up when you're done with it, feeling like you might have learned something in a really great episode.
I think it's more like The Simpsons than South Park in the sense that I do think there's stuff that is genuinely touching in a way that maybe is not so much in South Park.
Fair enough. I was going to say, Jen, that's maybe the great that, you know, you're more Simpsons and I'm more South Park. That might be how we come at life.
Oh, interesting. That's that's an interesting analogy. I need to think about that a little more.
I want to chew on that one for a while.
Yeah, definitely.
And maybe our listeners will too. Well, thanks for hanging around and joining us for Nick Kroll. And we hope you'll join Jen and I next time on Basic.
Basic is a Pantheon Media production in partnership with SiriusXM. Hosted by Jen Chaney
and Doug Herzog. Produced by Christian Swain and Peter Ferrioli.
Lindley Ehrlich is our assistant producer.
Mixed, mastered, and music by Jerry Danielson.
Edited by Zach Spisner.
You can find Basic on Apple Podcasts, the SiriusXM app, Pandora, Stitcher, or wherever you like to listen. If you like the show, please rate, review, and share so other people can find us. Don't forget to follow the show so you never miss an episode.